Take three.
Take three. Technical difficulties. We're starting this recording over. Welcome.
You're listening to the Fight for Together podcast.
We took a week off last week after taking a year off.
Because you had some important writing to do.
I was at a cabin writing alone, but we're back. Mm-hmm. And today, the topic is change. And I don't know. It's just kind of like the story of our relationship and how you went from having no opinions and saying, I don't care about almost everything.
For 15 plus years, 20 even.
Of our marriage. But shit, you were probably like that a lot way before we got married too.
Yeah. And that's what we can go into eventually, because those types of things don't just start when you're 20.
So background, like when we got married when we were 20. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things that seemed very difficult for a lot of couples were very easy for us. Like, basically our dynamic was I would come up with an idea and you would go along with it and agree with it. Mm-hmm. And this was about like everything.
Little things, big from things.
From picking out whether to go to McDonald's or Dairy Queen or what colors to paint the walls. I remember painting the walls like bright yellow, green, blue, and red. And I don't even know if I asked you first, because I knew like you wouldn't care. Mm-hmm. And then I planned a trip like biking across the country when Dove was one.
Yeah.
And that was like 100% my idea. And you didn't offer like any feedback that I remember at all for traveling or, I mean, you like kind of said like, I don't know about this, but like you didn't really express strong opinions about anything.
Yeah.
That I remember.
Yeah.
So that was like, I would say, a solid 15 years of our relationship.
Yep.
Which, in a way, worked out really good because I had opinions on everything. You had opinions on nothing. So our relationship was like, we were like peas and carrots. Like, it was just like...
Yeah. There was less, in that way, there was less friction in our relationship.
Yeah, we got a lot of stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
Made 6 kids. And then things started to change.
Yeah.
And, you know, our relationship, I think we've grown a lot since the beginning. Like, we were kids when we got married.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see like major changes, but I think the biggest changes for us were around the time that we left the church and community about 5 years ago. And that's when I think things started to like really
exponentially,
drastically
go
change.
Yeah.
To a point where really for the last 2 or 3 years, you have opinions about everything now.
Yeah.
And it's like pretty, I don't want to say it's inconvenient, although there's times when it really is, like when you buy cat fountains and trauma, whisker-free trauma cat feeding bowls for $18 on Amazon and shit like that. And I'm like, what is going on? I miss the old Cammy. But it's also been like the best thing for our relationship.
Yeah.
So what I wanted to talk about on this podcast is what the first 20 years of your life were like and why you didn't have opinions then.
Yeah.
What changed? And what's it like now dealing with two people that have oftentimes conflicting opinions?
Yeah. And I would say I'm still changing in that area. Like I still feel like I'm not fully there, like fully at the point where it's second nature for me to know what my opinion is or that kind of thing.
And what does fully mean? You know, I mean, we'll spend the rest of our life growing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay. I mean, let's talk about a friend whose name we will leave anonymous. But the point was, this friend, you and I both talked about her, and we were really good friends with this person. And there was, we were like a couple, and there would be this ongoing joke, because I'd always say, fuck, I'm going to say her name because I don't give a fuck. Grace. I'd say, like, hey, Grace, where should we go out to eat? And she'd be like, I don't care. Mm-hmm. And I would be like, yeah, you do. Where do you want to go? He's like, I don't care. And I'm like, come on, just tell me, where do you want to eat? And that'd be like kind of this ongoing joke. Yeah. Where she would never fucking say, like, you know, yeah, Red Robin or whatever.
Yeah.
But I had a feeling, like, I knew she cared. I think what happened was she didn't care enough. Like, the negativity of being either wrong or being disliked or being too loud and shadowing someone else's opinion was always more painful to her than actually getting the restaurant she wanted. That's one hunch I have. Mm-hmm. Anyways, you and I have talked about her a lot. And this, you know, dynamic, and how you feel you can relate to that now.
Yeah. Yeah. That reminds me of just, it makes me realize that, I mean, it's hard to know exactly what happened in my childhood, but I have like hunches. And one of the things is, I think early on, I must have realized that it was better to just not have needs or wants, because it was like, it wasn't just inconvenient. It was like, felt unsafe to have like certain, to be basically to be an individual.
Because in your family, there was like yelling and shit.
Yeah.
And I mean, were like afraid of that? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think I was. I probably saw what happened because, like, one of my siblings was more outspoken and opinionated, and, or at least just at least stated their opinions. And I saw, like, what happened to them when they did that. And so I think I was like, well, no, like, because in a child's mind, you don't really.
Which is what? How would you summarize what happened?
They would get like, there'd be like consequences to them that I didn't want. And even if that probably wouldn't have happened to me, a kid doesn't know that. A kid thinks, you know, doesn't understand like, oh wait, you wanting ice cream right now isn't gonna do that to you. But in a kid's mind, you don't know that. You just think. So I think I just developed this coping mechanism that kept me safe, and made it so that I could move around in the world without always being afraid.
Which amounted to never having an opinion.
Yeah, I guess you get so good at your coping skill, you know, for whatever it was, so many years of being a child, and then you become an adult, but you still feel those are so hardwired inside of you at that point that it's really, I didn't even know. I never really got a chance to develop my opinions to begin with, because, you know, you say I didn't have an opinion for the first 15, 20 years. I didn't know that. I didn't know that that was weird, that something was kind of weird about that.
Well, you said something recent. You just said something that was like, it was a coping skill.
Yeah.
I think that's really important, an important phrase.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a huge way that our perspective has changed, especially growing up in Christianity.
Yeah.
A lot of things that are basically trauma responses or coping skills,
mm-hmm.
which is just something you're doing to survive and get by.
Yeah.
Christians are very obsessed with behavior. the way something looks. They don't really care so much, in my experience, of what causes it.
Right.
So if you lie, maybe you were doing it to protect people or, you know, for something. But if you lie, it's bad.
Yeah.
But if you tell the truth, even if it's just to get someone in trouble, you get praise for it.
Yeah.
And in your case, I've heard it said in your family system that Cammy was such a good girl, mm-hmm. which basically what they mean is agreeable and opinionless.
Right.
So here you are basically exhibiting fear and what you called a coping mechanism or skill, mm-hmm. but yet it's being praised as actually positive behavior. And that gets really, that fucks with you, I think. And that gets really confusing, even into adulthood.
Yeah, that's a good point, because that's probably, that's the other thing that I think was going on, is I was actually gaining value and worthiness from my parents for being this way. And I was like, oh, and you know, as a kid, you're like, oh, that worked. I'm going to do that again.
You know, it's like getting A's on a report card.
And you want to be accepted by your parents, and you want them to look at you and say, like, I like you, you know? And so you do whatever you can do. And
you get the pat on the back.
And I was really good at it. Like, I was really good at, like, being invisible and really good at, like, not having needs that you could see. And
because here's the thing, like, I couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. It was like really, like, I see Rainier now. Fuck that kid.
Yeah, he can't do that.
He can, like, in a movie, he can stay quiet for approximately 5 seconds.
But Fulia can. Like, that's why you said, like, Fulia and I, like, our personalities are quite similar.
I couldn't stay quiet. So it's weird how something that has nothing to do with anything in terms of, like, good behavior, kindness, or love gets rewarded or penalized.
Some personalities in certain families are rewarded, and some personalities are demonized.
All my report cards say, like, Ben needs to, like, basically be quiet during class.
you did not follow the system very well, at least with that.
Okay, so then you're growing up. So then you get married, and what was it like for you with, like, you and me?
Well, I think what happened was I think personality-wise, there's some similarities between you and my mom. And so I think it was like, it felt like home to me. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, like, my mom had all these opinions and kind of ran my life. Now Ben has all these opinions and he can run my life. But I didn't see it as you running my life. I just thought that was normal. I just thought, well, this is the way I go about in the world. And I don't actually think I didn't have awareness of, like, oh, I don't have an opinion. Or something was offline there for me. I just thought that's who I was.
And one thing that's somewhat frustrating about this, I'll say, being the other side of this partnership over the years, is that a lot of people would see my side and they'd be like, Ben gets to do whatever he wants, which wasn't untrue. But also, I didn't ask for you to be quiet.
Yeah.
I couldn't get you to speak up.
Right.
And your mom voiced a similar sentiment at one point.
I don't know if she just didn't have the tools in her tool belt to help me speak up.
Well, I'm not saying it's your fault, but I'm just saying, like, mm-hmm. sometimes he would blame me and say, like, Ben walks all over Cammy. And I'm like, well, the bitch won't say what she wants to eat. Like, you know, so, like, it's just one of those things.
Right. And you were young, too, and you had your own shit.
Oh, totally. Like, and I didn't, you know, now I know how to make safe spaces where people, even people with difficulty finding or expressing their opinion, can do that better. But in that time, I wasn't good at that at all. But I just want to make the point that, like, mm-hmm. in an environment like that, it's complex. Oftentimes we look at the quote-unquote oppressor in a relationship.
But we don't. The one that's loud.
The one that's louder, yes. Yeah. But we don't look at why the other person that's quieter is attracted to the person that's loud.
Yeah.
And then you can see it takes two. Like, there's a reason why you and I were together.
Yeah.
In a way, we were like peas and carrots because it worked really well. Like, my biggest fear was to be silenced. Mm. Your biggest fear
was to have to talk.
Was to have to talk. So I was like, well, great. I'll do the talking.
Perfect.
And you're like, I'll shut up.
A match made in heaven.
Yeah. I mean, that's how it felt, like, logistically for a lot of years. Mm-hmm. I want to go through our sex life with this, too, because, or maybe, like, romance is a more accurate way of putting it, because that's one of the biggest things that's evolved and changed in this. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about the before, what changed, and now the after. In this time period, you don't have any sexual preferences that mm-hmm. you're letting on. Right. In fact, your only preference really is like less sex, which isn't really of a preference in my opinion. It's more of just like a reaction to mm-hmm. what I wanted mm-hmm. or what you saw happening, mm-hmm. which was a huge bummer for me and the relationship. Because even the things that you did express, I always got this feeling that what you're saying is really basically just what you thought I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
Like if I was like, what do you want to do tonight? You're like, well, I'd like to connect sexually. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, there's just something about your eyes where I was like, you're just trying to like make me, I mean, in a nice way, like you don't want my feelings to be hurt and all this, but I was like, what do you want? Like, if you could have anything ever.
Well, I would base what I want off of someone else, you, which I think that's what I did as a child. I would base what I want off of the people that mattered the most to me. So it would be a deferment instead of me actually sitting with myself and like being able to get to that. You know, because like that is important to me, but I don't think in actually getting to what I really want, I don't think I can start with that. Like, I think I need to start with like, if you weren't even in the picture, right? What do you want? Yeah. That's more of the exercise that I try to do now. And then I can bring you into the picture.
Yeah, because like what we've learned, what I've seen is that when you defer to what someone else wants, like the idea that love is based on sacrifice, that I need to sacrifice what I want so that you can have what you want, that's fun and romantic for short term. But that does not work well for long-term health, vibrancy, and the type of growth
people, and this is coming from the Christian world that I came from, people think that that will work, but you will always... I think always build resentment if you don't actually ask what you want. Like if you know, because it's just if you're always doing it for someone else.
And that happened because you would say like.
It will happen.
You would say like, oh, I want to connect sexually. But what came along with that is like then you viewed the night as like my night. Like you're doing me a solid or doing me a favor, which I didn't want.
Something in return, even if I don't consciously think that.
Which might have been a quote-unquote a break the next day. Or
or if I felt like you got your feelings hurt or something by something or disappointed, I thought you didn't have a right to that.
You'd be like, why are you hurt? I gave you what you wanted yesterday.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I did want sex or I did want connection in these ways. Mm-hmm. But actually, I wanted to know what you wanted.
Yeah.
Deep down, but I couldn't get it. I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't get you to say it.
And I couldn't get it.
Totally. Yeah, neither of us could.
So
we
then
didn't
you
know.
Definitely couldn't get it.
So then I would like settle for mm-hmm. the sex.
Right. Because that's all that we could get at.
Yeah, I guess. It's like a connection. It's better than nothing, like in a way. But it was also like filled with resentment and frustration, and it kind of felt a little fake and stuff like that. So what changed for you?
Yeah. A lot, but I think stepping out of these belief systems that I used to have where you always put someone else first, there was like a whole world that I did not have access to, being in the cultish Christianity that was in. It was like you weren't supposed to have, you were supposed to only like defer to certain like texts, i.e. the Bible, pastors, whatever. So as soon as we stepped out of this world, you know, we had a therapist that helped us. We had, I mean, I had all of a sudden, I just had access to all of this. It was information, but it was really information about me. Like I was able to see like, oh, I have these patterns. And I guess I stopped wanting to, I wanted to grow. And I started to become like unsatisfied with, I guess, like my patterns of like the last, however, 38 years of my life. Because
it was like, it was working with us, but our growth and potential was very stunted.
Well, I felt like so I'm trying to get words around this because this is like really challenging because this was like so, there was so much that happened in such a short period of time. But I, all of a sudden, there's these parts of me that started to emerge that were always there, but they had to be covered up because of what I used to believe in and the communities that we used to be a part of that they wouldn't be welcomed in, you know? And so all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, I'm like this. And I didn't know that. I guess I'm kind of like this. And, you know, you see me, you mirror whatever you see, right? So I'm starting to like see things for the first time that I'm like, I think I'm kind of like that person. And I'm kind of, and this is all outside of the religious world now, you know? And I think I got really curious. And I was like, I think I started to remember like how I was when I was a child, like these certain parts of me that hadn't yet been so damped down. And I think I just, and I think asking what you want is curiosity. Like you're actually curious. Like, I wonder what I want and what, and my desires and my wants aren't bad, you know? Cause I had the family system that it was unsafe to have the wants and desires. But then on top of that, I had this whole Christian system that was like, you should basically base all your wants and desires off of some God, i.e. some pastor, i.e. your interpretation of the Bible, you know, instead of like actually like intuitively sitting with yourself.
You remember like one of the first things I remember is like 8 years ago, you started playing the guitar, which was a huge old chore to get you to take guitar lessons. Like,
oh my gosh.
Because in this time period, not only did you not have opinions, kind of like parallel to what you're saying, you didn't really prioritize yourself. Like being a young mom, you know, we had six kids before the age of what? 30?
Yeah.
Five ish, kids, 35. Yeah. And so you're prioritizing kids, you're prioritizing your husband and marriage and then the church and then God. And so hobbies for especially a mom, but I think for any Christian is you have to come up with some fancy justification for why you're doing what you're doing. Like, oh, I'm doing this to save people or to meet non-Christians or whatever.
Yeah.
So anyways, but we started to figure this scam out and then you started taking guitar lessons and
this you know, was you and I have been
married for 33, so we've been married for 13 years. And I remember I heard you sing like while playing the guitar, like really for the first time in our marriage. And you were doing it in another room, like with the door closed. Mm-hmm. And I was like, holy shit, what is this? Because I liked it. I was like, this is really good. Like, she's really good. But I'd never heard this before. And I feel like that's kind of like a metaphor for a lot of what happened where I was like, you know, the other day, well, theoretically, hypothetically, we were on some sort of psychedelic drug. And you were like dancing. And I was like watching your eyes and your hands. It was the funniest damn thing I'd ever seen in my life. But it was the first time I'd ever seen you dance that way.
Yeah.
And I was like, Cammy, why don't you do that more? And I get these glimpses. Yeah. I've put together pictures I've seen watching Phalia and stories that you've told me and other people have told me about your childhood combined with these little glimpses I see to see like, oh, this is who you always were. Or this is what you always did, but you haven't for at least as long as I've known you, because you're doing these things I've never seen before.
Yeah.
And that's happened in our sex life. It's happened in the, you know, the dancing and the humor and the singing and having these opinions and having this certain sense of humor of all these things. I have the sense that a lot of these things kind of like went dormant or offline for a couple decades.
Yeah.
And we're rediscovering them. So it's not just the opinions that were.
But it's all connected. Hidden. Like everything's connected because the opinions were hidden because I was hidden. Like so much of who I was hidden. Or who I am, actually.
If you ask me, I think the biggest thing that I saw change in terms of like how you discovered yourself is creating space.
Hmm.
And I've seen this happen on a meta level, and I see it happen on minor levels. So I want to talk about both those. The meta level is like you left or took a break from certain relationships for some of them permanently and some of them for like a year.
Yeah.
And you said to close family or relatives, like, hey, I don't want to talk for, or I don't want you to text me, or I don't want to, you stop going to certain functions.
Yeah.
Okay. So there was these like breaks that you took.
And that was all after, like stepping out of the Christian cult too, by the way, which I think is pretty significant. Cause I think those two things were very tied together. Like my family of origin and that Christian cult.
So talk about that for a second because, and then we'll get into the other thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think my family of origin is so, their identity is so tied to this certain brand of Christianity that I also was tied to that certain brand of Christianity. So I knew, I guess you just intuitively know when things aren't safe, when you like know, okay, I gotta do it this way, you know, whether it started at 5 years old or whatever it was, 10 years old, to keep these relationships because I wanted to keep them. And I should say I needed to keep them. At least that's what I felt. And as a kid, you do. Like you need your parents, right?
So I want to dig into that because I was threatened to be sent off to a ranch in like fifth grade for stealing. A Christian ranch. But you were never threatened to be sent off. So like when you say keep them, like what do you mean? Because like, your parents wouldn't have like...
Well, maybe I mean...
disowned you,
no, right? I don't think... I think I more just mean I needed them to see me a certain way. Like I needed them to be happy with me. I needed them to be pleased with me. I didn't want there to be conflict. So I would do things to make sure there wasn't conflict, or I wouldn't do things to make sure there wasn't conflict. Also, it's just everything's tied into God too. And like, how do you argue with that if you believe it, right? If you believe God,
like you want to make God happy?
Yeah. And when you're in that type of religion, God and parents are almost like one.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, that's just the way it is. In fact, God's probably even above your parents in a way.
You know who writes a lot about this is Alfie Cohn. In fact, he posted this thing on Twitter today that I kind of want to look up because I reposted it. And Alfie Cohn is I believe he's a Harvard psychologist. And he writes these books about, and he does these lectures on parenting. He's not religious at all that I know of, but he talks a lot about the negative impact of providing external stimuli for kids' behavior, both like with like spankings and punishment. He talks about how spankings and punishment don't work. Mm-hmm. But then on the flip side, there's these studies that show like that kids that are at the playground, when they're nice to other kids, and then you actually go and tell them like, hey, good job, or you pat them on the back, or you like give them an award or whatever, it actually fucks things up. They actually are like less nice.
Mm-hmm.
like, because they start to equate. Anyways,
yeah,
all of what you're saying is like, I think it's a powerful thing. Like, I cannot find this shit. It's a powerful thing when parents like attach approval to behavior.
Yeah.
And they say, like, you're doing a good job when you're honest, when you're a nice, quiet, obedient child.
Yeah.
And okay, so this is what it is. Alfie Cohn's tweet says, that's A-L-F-I-E-K-O-H-N, says, if unconditional love and genuine enthusiasm are present, praise isn't necessary. If they're absent, praise won't help. That's fascinating. So he's basically saying, you know, the praise that you got as a kid,
yeah,
like, wasn't necessary if there was actually love and enthusiasm over who you were.
Yeah. There's also this part of me that really believed that I wasn't good with words, and I really didn't know how to stand up for myself. I didn't think I could, and I think I had many examples of this that prove that to myself. And so the easiest way to not get yourself in trouble with like standing up for yourself is to not have opinions, you know, like, because what I saw would started to change, especially in the last few years, is that all of a sudden I realized I could express myself. Like, maybe it was a little harder than you, but I knew I could do it. And I feel like I started to trust myself again, like, and I didn't have to do it a certain way. I mean, I came from a family that both my mom and my brother knew how to express themselves really well verbally. And I knew I didn't know how to do that as a kid. And so it was just easier for me just not to talk.
Like, you couldn't, the people you're talking about in your family, your brother and your mom, were both very good in like a debate format.
Yes.
They would square off. They would raise their voice. They would list their logical argument. And they would, it's like their love language. And the way that they would hear someone else is if they did the same.
And
which I am too, by the way, like that.
Well, and I thought, well, I can't do that, so I might as well not even try anything. So I actually think that's also where me not having opinions came from, because I knew I couldn't, I like didn't trust that I could stand up for myself.
And that probably is like what the first 15 years of our marriage looked like.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, what do you want to do? And you're like, I don't know. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm going to, and you were like, and you would like back down and quiet down. And I'd be like, okay, well, great. Let's go.
Yeah.
And I noticed this about one of our kids, like Eden.
Mm-hmm.
Our conversations like aren't always like super great.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked about this in a podcast like 10 episodes ago or something. But what is great, what I've really enjoyed, is our letter writing with each other. Mm. She writes like some of the best letters that I ever get.
Yeah.
And that's like just a different style, like where someone can think through what they want. They can like write it at the speed and the pace, and they can write it in a place that feels safe to them.
Yeah.
And they can deliver it when they want to or not deliver it.
Well, and I noticed something about myself that when I feel safe, when my nervous system feels safe, I can express myself verbally beautifully.
Let me say one thing to tie up the thought. Then But you could like listen to Eden and think she doesn't have opinions, or she doesn't care about the relationship.
Right.
But that's not true. She's just not a good debater or a orator, but she has the ideas, and you have to figure out how to hear them from her. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. Well, I've had a lot of experience now in the last few years where I am very verbal at times. And I mean, there's certain people I'll get around. I mean, you're one of them for sure. But then there's certain people I'll get around where I'm just like, you can't shut me up. And I've noticed this about Felia too. And I think I need a certain environment to like just be like, here, okay, I'll give it to you, you know. But so I think I'm really sensitive to that type of thing. And if I feel like a little bit like, you know, I'm not going to like express, even to this day, I'm not going to express myself unless I feel like I need to. But That's an interesting thing too, because I think some people are just more sensitive to, you know, they pick up certain things, certain energies, right? And they're just like, ooh, that's like too much. Like they're just like, oh, and then it's like shut down, you know?
Well, and I'm like virtually tone deaf to a lot of those energies. Like, you know, the last marathon is a perfect example. Like, you know, we run the marathon, the internet erupts with like hate, like Kara Goucher or whatever the fuck her name is, all those other bitches are out there being like, six-year-olds, like these parents are abusive, blah, blah, blah. And I don't even like, I get energy off that. I'm like, cool, a conversation. Like, this is fun. Like, and oftentimes in our relationship, I have a lot of energy to express my opinion. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not rejection proof because I do have a threshold I've learned.
Yeah.
But it's not where yours is, where
yeah.
you'll say an opinion, and if I don't, like, you know, if I shoot it down too quick, like, it'll be another week before I hear an opinion from you, it feels like. Or it's, like, a big deal. You're, like, or you'll say something, and I won't even, like, hear it, and I'll be, like, you know, we'll talk later, and you'll be, like, I took that huge risk. And I was, like, that was your risk? But it was for you.
For me, yeah.
Because it's hard for me to understand that, because that would, that, I take risks in communication, and and anytime you express a desire, honestly, it is a risk, because you can get rejected, and you can open yourself up to a place that is not, if it's not reciprocal, and if it doesn't feel appreciated, eventually you shut down, which is bad for relationships, I think. And so,
my threshold for criticism used to be pretty much zero. Now I feel like I have a I have a higher threshold for that. It's I'm still pretty sensitive to it, but I can see I think like someone recently, a friend of mine, I told me like that they were like, I did this video, and they're like, I really like this video, but the music was too loud. And it was an interesting moment for me, because I could feel these different parts of me. I could feel a part of me that's like, oh man, I'm so bad at these. Why do I even try? You know, all this like self, like,
you suck. Never berating. Make another video again.
Pretty much. Like, but then I was able to see through that shit and be like, okay, that's one part of me talking. This other part of me is like, wow, this friend like told me something that was actually true. Like it was actually the video suffered because of it, and I could see it. And I was like, I'm glad they told me, and I hope they keep telling me, you know. But I, 5 years ago, in the last 30 plus years of my life, I could not handle that. Like I would just be like, well, first of all, I would not even be in the game. I would not be making videos. You know, that's how bad that, you know, that's where that voice gets you. It gets you to a point where you're just like, you don't put yourself out there at all. Like, because you're so afraid of that type of, you're afraid of failing. And I realize I've had such a adverse feeling around making a mistake. Like that, my whole life, I've tried, like, it was like my goal to never make a mistake, which is awful, because then you don't really live. And I kind of realized that, like, looking back at my life, like, how much I've done that. But
so I have, like, I just have a feeling that, like, there's people listening to this podcast. I don't like to speak to the audience in this way very often, but this is just what I feel now. There's people who are in the audience that are, like in marriages or friendships or partnerships, and they feel like they're married to someone who's like just quiet, or it's like their personality that they're just subdued and opinionless and docile and agreeable and whatever else bullshit friendly stuff.
Go with the flow.
But really they're married to someone, or they're friends with someone who's afraid.
Yeah.
It was for good reason.
Probably shut down early on in their life and realize it was too costly to like open up again.
So like, I don't know what I'm saying, except for like, I guess my perspective of this whole thing is that was convenient and that was nice for a while. But I feel like as you have come into having opinions, and I want to share one opinion specifically because it's going to be a funny one, but it's so much better Okay, so the story is you came to me about 6 months ago, 8 months ago, and you were nervous, but you said, I feel like I need to take a break from sex, which for us was like, I think it was one or two times a week is what you said. And for us, that was like a big shift, and you were nervous.
Yeah.
Why were you nervous?
I think I was nervous that I would lose, I don't know. It had something to do with like my relationship with you and my attachment to you. And I didn't want to mess with that. And I didn't want to feel certain things like if you're disappointed, like I didn't want to feel your disappointment. Like that was too tough for me. It still is.
So my reaction, and you said that you have these like two voices in your head. I also have those two voices in my head.
Sorry, I have one other thing.
Go for it.
Also, I was afraid of, I think for me, sex was a coping skill in our relationship. And to take that coping skill and like make it less.
Because we feel connected when we're having
sex. Yeah, it's like regularly. An easier way to feel that feeling. Yeah, of connection.
Dude, not as much as the good old days. Remember the good old days when we just like get in a fight and we just have like wild makeup sex and we're like, yeah,
oh my gosh.
We're like, there's nothing wrong with the world.
Yeah.
It felt so good for like fucking
an
hour or five or whatever. And then
you're so blissfully unaware that
before you start the cycle over again. Shit. There's something we said for that. Can't get those days back though. No. Now we're like too aware. We're like, we didn't solve shit. But that was fun.
Yeah, the drug don't work anymore.
Okay, where was I? I have those two voices too, two different voices. Mm-hmm. You tell me you want to have sex left. So, of course, there's the one side that's like, damn it, that sucks. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that voice is really like, I would say, maybe 10 or 20% if I'm honest. I was going to say 5 or 10%, but let's say 10 or 20% where I'm like, whoa, this is weird. Like, this is, it's destabilizing. It's scary. Like, I thought my opinion went around here. And now I don't know. Like, are we ever going to have sex again? Like, there's these voices in my head, you know, what if she likes this new way better? But then there's this, like, much louder voice, which, and I told you, how many times have I brought this up since this time? 20 times? 10 times?
I don't know what you're referring to, but...
Well, what I'm referring to is that I've thanked you, and I've said that you saying that was just like one of the coolest things that's ever happened in our relationship.
Yeah, you say that a lot.
Because you... I don't care what it is.
Yeah.
Like, when you offer yourself and your opinion, even if it's creating a boundary, I think this is what some people... Like, I have a hard time even believing this sometimes. Like, we shared with it last week with our son-in-law. We're trained to see that love is like, love is giving flowers and love is offering sex and love is saying yes. But sometimes love is saying no. Well, and sometimes love is creating a boundary.
It's like love is like actually offering who you are. And if you're actually offering who you are, it's not always going to be yes.
Ooh, that's so good. Yes. Yeah. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. And so if you're having sex just to try and make me happy, that's not love at all. That's people pleasing. That's a bullshit coping mechanism, and it's shallow and it's fake, and it's gonna result in like the sex is only gonna be so good because you're not even there.
Well, and I'm realizing I have a pretty shitty version of what I think you want. I realize like because you even said like 10 or 20%. I would have said like, oh, I thought that was like 50 or 60 or 70. But anytime I try to get into your head, and I think, which I try to do that a lot because even like it's just. I do that a lot. It's not accurate. Like it's actually because only you know.
And even I hardly know.
Yeah. But if anyone's going to know, it's going to be you.
Yeah.
And you know, you can tell me that. Or I can ask you. But a lot of times I just assume like, oh, well, he's going to blah, 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 blah.
But for where you came from and where we came from, the sexiest thing you've ever said to me was that you want less sex.
Yeah.
And I like sex.
That's, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But and this is where I want to paint the picture of like what life has looked like now. That's been what, 6 or 8 months ago, but really we're talking a journey of 2 or 3 years where it always follows the same pattern. It's a little bit scary at first. You're breaking a pattern that's familiar, and God bless it. Familiarity is nice. You know, there's something we said about the way things used to be and what worked, but that doesn't necessarily mean that is what works best now or for where we want to head.
Right.
And now you have opinions about all sorts of stuff. Sex life being one of them. Stupid Amazon bowls for our cats that don't create whisker trauma for $17 being another. And all these other things. And,
stupid to you.
Yes, definitely. And there's always this like 20% inconvenience, but it's so much more romantic and I don't know what, I'm totally at a loss for words of what, it's so much deeper of a friendship to feel like you're getting what you want now. Like we can't get into too much detail, I guess, but like our sex life is so much more satisfying. Like it's nice that you're trying to give me what I want, but it's so much more sexy to see someone else experiencing deep pleasure. And that's just on the sexual level. That's like every, but that's true of, I think, every level. Like when we go on a trip or we're doing these things, like even I think going on the Appalachian Trail was, you know, at the very beginning of where you really made that push to do that.
Yeah, which that's an interesting story too, because that's one of the memories I can actually think where I actually put my foot down and was like, no, I'm not doing the Appalachian Trail. But this was back in 2003, you know, and I was like, no, because you wanted to do it back then.
And you even needed your parents' help to put your foot down.
Oh, yeah.
You remember?
No, I mean not. I mean, I don't remember.
Well, we had
very
this
much.
Meeting in my living room where they were there and they were like,
"Okay, I do remember
you
that."
Ben, you need to agree not to do the Appalachian Trail, and I was like, "Okay." And
I thought that had to do with nursing, but
I think it was all in the same.
Oh, okay.
Vein, but
yeah. So then, what's cool about that story is that now, like 15 years later, I was like
5 years ago this week, by the way.
Yeah, I was like, I want to do this, and I was the one who was pulling that horse. Yeah.
And so much of our parenting and our, I know I'm saying sex life a lot, but that's one of the first things that come to my mind because it's important to me. Our romance, our adventure, our home life is better, I think. I enjoy it more.
Yeah.
When you're expressing yourself.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to cover this final thing, and then we got to end this thing, I think.
Yeah. Well, I want to say something, and I think, you know, this is a pretty heavy thing to talk about, because I think one of the reasons, among many, why people don't want to tackle their trauma conditioning, which you could call me not having an opinion. That was like, that was a heavy trauma conditioning happening for years and years and years and years, is because once you start healing yourself, you realize how much you actually lost. I realized like all those years, like you said, all those things went dormant. They were still there, but there was parts of me that like I missed out on, you missed out on, our kids missed out on. And it's really, it's hard. It's really important, I think, to know that that grief is going to come. And to, I've been trying to just like be able to process it when I can, and to feel it when I can, because it is a huge loss. Because you don't realize how much you've lost until you start getting it back again. And you're like, oh, shit. Like, where was all this?
And I don't, you know, I have sympathy for you and your perspective, I think it's like really important, but I don't have that same perspective on that. At least I don't process it or feel it the same way. Hang on one second. What's up? We're still not done yet. We're almost done.
Soon. Yeah. Okay. We'll let you know. We'll talk.
I got the tablet from Homie's house because I did some work.
Okay, earlier. We'll be over there in about 10 or 15
minutes. We'll talk to you in a little bit, okay, bud?
Right. The way I view it is, and this is just what I choose to focus on. It's not mutually exclusive from yours, but I just think you were doing the best you could with what you had.
Yeah.
You know, they say, like, I don't know what percentage of our brain we actually use. It's minusculely small.
Yeah.
I feel like it's 5 or 10%. So you could spend our entire life looking at our brain and be like, oh, we're not using 90% of it. Like, what a loss, what a loss. But, you know, you could also say, well, shit, last year I used 4%. This year I'm using 5%. Like, that's incredible. And, you know. Well,
yeah. And I guess I'm saying, like, and I agree with that perspective. But there's time, there's moments where, like, the grief will just hit me.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is I think it's important for me to process that because it is there is a loss there. Yeah.
I just don't feel that in the same way as you. I don't know why. Maybe I'm broken, but okay. So today, like right now, what does this look like? If you were to ask me, what do you want to do today? I have a pretty good idea. Like I could tell you
and I've always
at any time
admired and was envious of how, even to this day, like how easy that is for you to just like grab a hold of.
Yeah, I'm a fucking goddamn superhero.
Like, how do you just.
It's just there. I don't know. It's not like a thing I even try.
Yeah.
You are not like that.
Mm-mm.
And this would be a constant battle with like date nights because I would plan date nights. And I would ask you what you want to do on date night, and it's like 6:30, and you're like, pizza, which is what we do every date night. And I felt like you didn't care because you needed more time to actually figure out your opinion, even forget about the 15 years, but even just like
even now
on a moment-to-moment basis, you don't have it at the ready. But you've started doing this thing in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Which is every morning.
Yeah. I call it my morning check-in where I just have this pad of paper and I just write out like my day, like what my day is going to look like, give or take. And then I try to write out what I want for that day. And if there's something I'm feeling, if there's like a need, if there's something that's just all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I have this desire. It's much easier, I will say, for me just to write out the facts of the day. It's much harder for me to get at those, like, I don't know what it is, if it's feelings or what it is, but like the wants, the desires, the needs, especially for certain things. And sometimes I'll come back to that paper and write something down in the middle of the day, like, oh yeah, like something will just like come to me. I'll be like, oh yeah, I'm gonna write that down, because sometimes it doesn't come to me all at the same time in the morning, but I'm at least giving space for it.
Yeah, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, shit, to even have a paper that has stuff down that even, you know, where stuff comes to you in the middle of the day. Before, stuff did not come to you in the middle of the day because you weren't asking the question at the beginning of the day.
No, and I had so much stuff in the way, I think, of like me getting to that.
So what have you noticed about, like, what are you writing down? That any surprises?
One of the things that I have been paying attention to that I realized that I actually know is what my energy feels like for that day. Because I'll have days where I'm like, I'm tired. I'll have days where I'm like, I'm energized. I'll have days where I'm like, I feel really creative today. Like, it changes every single day. Like, it's something a little bit different or a lot different. You know, I feel like I have things where I'm realizing like, oh, I really wanted to do this. Like, I really wanted to stretch, or I really wanted to meditate today, or I really wanted to connect with Ben. How do I want that to look like for me? Like, and it's really cool. It's cool having the conversation with just me and without anyone else, because that's what I need to actually get to the root of what I want. Because if there's other people in the room and we're having a conversation, it's much harder for me to like get to what I want. But if it's just me, you know,
I don't even hear the other people. So it's easy for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I do, but I don't. And can I share how that's impacted me?
Yeah.
Because like what used to happen, like I said at the very beginning of the podcast, is I would say like, I'd be like, what do you want to do tonight? And you're like, I want to take a break from sex, which is a fucking shitty thing to hear when I'm asking, what do you want to do? One thing you don't want
to
do.
Yeah, and that's the easier thing for me to latch on to.
So basically, you would take what you thought I wanted, mm-hmm. and then you would just deny it.
I don't want that.
But and I was like, well, fuck. So it leaves me being like, does she care about me? Does she want connection? Like, does she even like me? Will we ever have sex again? Like, those types of questions.
Yeah.
Whereas now what's starting to happen, instead of telling me what you don't want, you're starting to come to me with what you do want, which is like you're saying things like, hey, I want to go for a walk with you, or I want to take mm-hmm. a bath with you, or I thought it'd be fun to do a massage and listen to this or watch a movie with you tonight in bed, or all these things, which are like, I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. cool.
Yeah.
Because I like sex, but I like connection with you way more.
Yeah.
And sometimes sex is like a way to connect, but there's so many ways that are so interesting and make me feel appreciated and valued and safe and all the good things I loved that are like really the basis of our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And you used to not say those things.
No.
Like...
Yeah, it's wild. Like, I feel like the last 6 months, the only way I can describe it verbally is it feels like something came back online. Like this part of me I can now feel again. And it's been 30 years, you know, or something where I couldn't feel it. And now I can feel this part of me that's like, oh, I want this. And sometimes... Another thing that I've noticed that I need a lot of times is you'll come to me, you'll say like, what do you want? Blah, blah, blah. And it's like really hard for me to just to know that in the moment. So I will say to you, I need to take some time to think about this. Sometimes I won't think about it. And maybe that's just my way of saying like, I don't want to think about it or whatever. I don't know. Or it's too difficult or whatever. Or I got too much other shit going on in my brain. But oftentimes I will actually think about it, and I needed space. But I've learned to ask for that.
And even when you ask for space, and even when you like relationships, like just like music, you know, music, people think the most important thing with music is the sounds. And Alan Watts and some of those other assholes say the same shit.
Yeah.
Wrong. They all say the most important part of music is not just the sounds. It's the gaps in between the sounds.
The silence. Yeah.
Like music would not be music without the silence in between.
Yeah.
And in relationships, it's like ironically the same way. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we have our intimate moments physically and emotionally and cognitively and all this. But the times that you ask for space are just as important and create more value. They create a more legit connection when you take space and figure out what you want and need.
Yeah.
And you actually start fighting for that in this life and relationship.
Yeah.
It has made our relationship so much more authentic and intimate and better than those times when you're just like in it, but you're in it like 20%.
Yeah.
You're not really in it. You're participating in the relationship as a coping mechanism.
Yeah. And I will say that I think that one of the words that comes to me of like how I feel these days with being able to actually ask what I want and get to what I want is I feel empowered by myself. Like, I am empowering myself because I can now ask those questions. Someone's not just asking me those questions. I can ask that and I can actually get to the answers, which, and that's, you know, it's so disempowering to not be able to get to those answers. 'Cause then what do? Like, you're looking to everyone else to answer that for you. And that's shitty, man. No one else knows what you want and what you need better than you do.
It's just, people need to be okay with quote unquote making mistakes too.
Yeah.
Like, partners need to allow space for their partners to like fuck up and to at least try it. I mean, I really don't believe there's such a thing as fucking up when it comes to this kind of thing anyways, but, you know, like, finding your voice and expressing your will is, people do weird shit. You know, in the course of doing that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we like to make fun of, like, toddlers and stuff. Like, there's all these stories of how they, like, will throw these temper tantrums and they'll, like, you know, the whole, like, mine, 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 and then you say yours, and then they say yours. You know, they don't even care. They're just trying to know that they have a voice.
Yeah.
You know, and that they're heard. And when you're not used to being heard, sometimes it takes practice. Anyways, okay. Moving the fuck on. Any final thing? No?
Well, I think one other thing that I... that has helped me ever since the last 2 to 3 years especially, is I am learning how to have a secure attachment with myself and therefore also with you, you know, the person I'm the most intimate with. And I do think there's a huge connection there too. Because if I don't feel like I can soothe myself or I can take care of myself if something goes south, then those are all reasons why I will not offer who I really am. You know, if you actually think, okay, I can take care of me. I know how to take care of me now. Then you will more likely offer your authenticity because, you know, if things don't turn out the way, like if you reject me for some reason, or even if in my mind, I think you could reject me, right? I know, okay, I can deal with this. Like, I can take care of me. But I think for most of my life, I did not believe that. And I don't even know if I had the tools at that point to actually take care of me. So I think that's a huge piece too.
Okay. TMI is done.
Done.
What'd you guys think? Leave a comment on YouTube below. Few other things. We have, 5 years ago, we started the AT this week. March 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are doing a sale for our book, 2,000 mm-hmm. Miles Together. This book has 4.767 stars, which reminds me, the single best thing you can do to help me besides buy the book is to leave a review on Amazon for this book if you've read it. So it's got like positive reviews, and I really believe like it can change people's lives, like in that it's a fucking inspirational story, and I worked like hell to... I hired the right people to make it, like, the story's well written, like, because I didn't feel like I had the skill set to do it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. It's honest shit. So it's just like that out of the box. Like, it, a lot of people have said that it gives them a new way to think of family, not that they are going to do what we're going to do, but that they're just like, oh, that's possible. So if you're interested in that, now is the time to buy it. It's, I on our website, I knock down the prices anyways. So, and then this week, it's $5 off in addition to that, which basically at the end of the day means, what is it? I think a paperback is $12. The ebook is $2. Fuck, you know, $2 for the ebook. And if you buy the paperback for $12, you get the ebook for free. Like, mm-hmm. so, you know, it'll be emailed to you instantly. And then if we still have copies that are signed by the entire family, all eight of us, mm-hmm. and it's called the Trail Magic Bundle, and it comes with snacks mm-hmm. And treats that we ate on the trail that you can eat while enjoying the book, along with a postcard and a bookmark and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And I think that's like $30 or $35 or something like that. But the coupon code is 5 years. I'm going to put all that in the description below. And that helps us get rid of books and fund the podcast and all that kind of stuff.
And there's also, you also get a discount on t-shirts that we sell.
Shit, you know, I didn't put the coupon code for that.
Okay, never mind. Well, you can still buy them.
Because I couldn't. I had to pick like books. It's such a pain in the ass. That's okay. I didn't want to make $5 off your music because that, then we're basically giving away for free. Unless you just want to make it $5 off everything.
I mean, yeah.
All right. It's going to be $5 off everything. So I'm going to change the coupon code. So, okay. Yeah,
t-shirts. Okay, so t-shirts, mugs, my music is all on there. So take a look.
Also, I wanted to respond to two comments that we got last week. Because I read the YouTube comments and they're very...
Yeah, I think I did too.
Fun. It's fun getting feedback from you guys.
It is.
Okay, this is from Sandy.
Oh, it made me tear up, but how many people were like, oh, welcome back. I missed you.
Yeah, there was a lot of that.
That was really cool.
I was like, fuck, who listens to this podcast?
I was like, you know? Oh, I missed you too.
I mean, I know it sounds, it's like 3,000 people or 2,000. I don't know what the number is, but I mean, I know to some people that like might not seem like much, but I guess what YouTube counts as, at a point, the numbers don't mean anything. It's like, it's fun to hear that how it actually lands with people.
Oh, totally.
That it's not a one way. We record it, you know, in our living room, and then you stick it in the universe, and then it's like, I forget that there's people on the other side of it sometimes.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Sandy C6569 says, okay, so this is all in response to the podcast about our son-in-law. I'm inviting him to everything.
Okay.
I don't care what country you come from because everyone has appreciation. He just doesn't have any! ! I booted a couple of my two daughters' boyfriends to the curb because they were lazy. I can't believe he said no. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall, LOL. I think you're doing the right thing. Okay. So, Sandy, I appreciate the whatever, like, sentiment. But one of the things I wanted to make really clear about what we shared last week is that it's one thing to kick someone to the curb or out of your house. It's another thing, in my opinion, to then cross a line and to say that they're being lazy or that they have no appreciation. Those are two separate things. And if there's anything I wanted to make clear about our boundary, my boundary that I created last week in the podcast of uninviting my son-in-law to everything, it wasn't because...
Oh, what was that?
Yeah. Hold on, please.
How long has that not been recording? Card full.
So it probably didn't just turn off. Hopefully.
Why is that full? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, where I think maybe you're going with this is we don't know if someone's actually being lazy.
All right, the video's done, but we still have the audio.
We only know how we feel about something.
Yes.
Which those are two very different things, judging someone's behavior and versus just saying your behavior doesn't work for me.
And the more, in fact, the more I try and get into someone else's shoes and figure out why they're doing what they're doing, it's kind of like the conversation you and I just had.
Mm-hmm.
One, we're wrong a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And two, it's actually just a big old giant distraction
from
figuring out what it is that you need and want anyways. If you don't want to pay for two freeloaders in your house, you shouldn't be paying for two freeloaders in your house, regardless of if they're the nicest people in the world or if they're lazy or if they're assholes.
Right.
But I wasn't accusing my son-in-law of being not having appreciation or being an asshole. I was just saying it wasn't working for me anymore. Okay, mm-hmm. Second comment. Do you want to read this one?
Yeah. Uh-oh.
I do not know what's happening.
Right. I'll read this. Okay, this is from Perry Rush. There is so much about your family dynamic I have admired over the years that I would share with my grown kids. They have never heard a swear word come out of my mouth, and we don't smoke or drink, so they would be quite surprised if I were to recommend your channel to them. That's funny. But I would not ask you to change who you are and the way you express yourself for my comfort. It might seem strange that I feel so connected to your family and the effort you put out for your wife and kids. It's that effort and love that connects me to you, although that might not be reciprocated since we are far apart in other ways. There is much I admire and respect about you and your family. Thank you for sharing. I just wish I could get the G-rated filtered version. Ha.
I like these kind of comments. I have a lot of respect for people that listen to us and either don't agree with our lifestyle or choices, at least
but
all of them.
They just take what they
But you have an open mind enough to listen.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't care if you say bad words or don't say bad words or...
Smoke or drink smoke or not.
Yeah, it's like, I think it takes a lot of maturity to be able to find what we do have in common.
Yeah, and to listen to someone who maybe you wouldn't normally listen to. Like, oh, you guys swear. I don't normally talk to people who swear, but I'm going to listen to you.
Yeah, I think that's cool. And and while swearing, like, doesn't turn me off, there are things that turn me off.
Sure, everyone has that people. Stuff. Yeah.
And I can relate to, I don't know. I just think that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
We are done. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to Fight for Together. We'll see you next time.